back to Hawk Off the Press podcast. My name is Madison Ritzik. I am the Iowa football beat writer for the Gazette. I have another Iowa football beat reporter joining us today, Elliot Claw from 247 Sports, specifically Hawkeye Insider. Elliot, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Maddie. I did not know how to pronounce your last name until this moment, so I'm glad
that you said
it. Also, very close, Clough, like rough and
Clough.
Tough.
Oh. Yes. Okay. The two of us with our confusing last names, man.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It happens. But no. So you and I, we've both just finished up the football season, and which means that yesterday was one of the most important days of the off season, that being National Signing Day. And a whopping 22 high schoolers have signed their letters of intent, 18 of which scholarship. So they are now officially Hawkeyes. And Elliot, you've done quite a bit of research following along pretty much every single one of them. So first things first, I mean, what have you made of this overall recruitment class that's going to be coming in over the next few months?
Yeah, it's one of the better classes that Iowa's had in recent memory. I think 7 4-stars for us at 24/7. 1, 2. Yes, yeah, 7 4-stars with... Four near 4-stars that are 89s on a scale of 90 becomes 4-star for us at 24/7 Sports, but really loaded class. I mean, they got a significant bump in this most recent rankings update for us, particularly Darian Jones, Traydon Bessinger. But I mean, this is one of those scenarios, and I said it today earlier on our podcast when I was recording with Sean Bach, is that I think this might be. Maybe, I don't know, fallout's the right word, but fallout of how much certain programs put an emphasis on the transfer portal is prospects that are of that ilk, that 4-star, you know, level might get overlooked. And Iowa is still very focused on the high school level. So, I mean, you got your quarterback, you got your 3 stud linebackers, you got 5 offensive linemen, you get 3 receivers in this class. You got a Phil Parker special and a late ad in Ronnie Hill. You got Darian Jones, who grew up an Iowa fan, Marcello Vitti, who grew up in Michigan. There, I mean, it's just like all these pieces that just make sense for Iowa, plus the best win in terms of quarterback recruiting in probably about 2 decades, dating back to Jake Christensen, who didn't really pan out at Iowa. But a lot of talent in this class. A lot of pieces that you look at and say, that makes sense. That's a Hawkeye. That's somebody that can be developed and be awesome in 3-4 years.
Well, you mentioned the development and you mentioned how Iowa still kind of has that, I guess, traditional, I say in air quotes, recruiting style when it comes to signing a class. Kirk Ferentz was talking about it yesterday. You know, they don't send out 300 offers like that. That's not a thing that Iowa has ever done, let alone in today's modern era. And then on top of that, this is a program that does still openly admit that they're going to reach out to high school coaches first. It's from when you and I were in high school, and if we had opportunities to be able to talk with coaches before the transfer portal or NIL existed when you and I were in school, at least for me, I remember when I was doing field hockey recruitment, it was first person that, you know, a college coach reached out to was your high school coach. And that's what this coaching staff at Iowa continues to do. And I know with this transfer portal, everyone kind of gets a little bit more of that instant gratification, but how much has this traditional recruitment style continued to benefit Iowa in a modern era?
I think a lot. I mean, when you're a program like Iowa, you're just not getting, you know, obviously that's 7 4-stars in this class. That's a unique situation for Iowa for most years. You know, they might get 3, 4. Xavier Wampa, one of the more unique additions a few years ago, being a 5-star top 10 recruit type of kid. But I think he was top 20 for 24/7 Sports. But anyway, this is just kind of the way that Iowa has to do it, right? I mean, they don't have the NIL treasure trove like a Tennessee, like an Ohio State, like a Florida or any of these major SEC programs, major Big Ten programs. So they've got to get guys. They've got to build relationships with these 3, maybe low 4-star and maybe even unrated guys and see that flash of potential and develop them into what they can be and just continue to be a developmental program, because you get these players with potential and you mold them into something that's an NFL player. I mean, Sam Laporta, Lucas Van Ness, Like these guys were not all world recruits. They were not, I mean, TJ Hawkinson, even, I don't think he was heavily recruited. I have to go back and look, but I mean, Josie Jewell, right? Like would have gone to Luther College if he hadn't ended up at Iowa. Cooper DeGene, even, he didn't have a, So these are guys that have flash potential, but then Iowa just brings them in and helps them realize that potential and sends them to the NFL. And that's how you continue to increase that pedigree of ultimately getting guys like a Juju Manson or a Cason Thomas who say, hey, I can follow in the footsteps of a Jay Higgins, of a Jack Campbell. And rather than Cason Thomas grew up a Nebraska fan, Juju Manson was very much considering Kansas State, even though his dad, Jason Manson, is on staff at Iowa. So Iowa still able to pull some of these recruitments off. Hats off to Seth Wallace. I mean, he's not just a great football coach, clearly, who can mold linebackers that are some of the best in the country. He can recruit them too. So they just continue to stack positions like that, that they've shown that can develop and make these guys into the best that they can be.
Well, I mean, isn't there a saying where it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It feels like that's kind of the system and the identity that Iowa has. And some of it is when you have leadership of Kirk Ferentz being there as long as he has.
Yeah, you know, who doesn't like to change things?
Exactly. Well, yeah. And honestly, it's paid off in that sense when you do think of the number of players that they've been able to develop. And you look at the numbers for this year's class specifically, 9 in-state, 13 out-of-state total. So that's all 22 signees. I really want to hone in on Luke Brewer real quick, though. He reclassified about a month and a half ago, and then not too much longer after, he commits to Iowa. When we were talking to Tyler Barnes yesterday, the team's general manager, he was saying that when he did announce the reclassification, it felt like Iowa was like maybe third or fourth on the list. He didn't think it was that high. Barnes also didn't necessarily give away what ended up being the reason that Luke decided to commit to Iowa. He said, he was like, you know, when we get an opportunity to talk to him, you know, later this off season in the summer, we'll learn that answer. But for Iowa to get a tight end like that in a rather loaded tight end room that'll exist next year, I mean, that's a huge incoming freshman to join what could be a very, very impressive tight end room the next season.
And this is in a class where Iowa wasn't really planning on taking a tight end. Like you said, he was originally part of that 27 class, and that includes Jax DeGene, Cooper's younger brother, Cooper Terwilliger from the Dakotas. I can't remember which Dakota. I think South Dakota. And that 27 tight end class is pretty loaded. But yeah, decides to reclassify. And I mean, I've got his offer list in front of me right here. Iowa State, Tennessee, Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Miami, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Oregon, Penn State, Wisconsin. Like that's not all of them either. But
yeah,
what I said today on our pod is this looked like a guy that he did grow up an Iowa fan. I think that's something that Tyler said yesterday, in a family of Iowa State fans, and his sister plays softball at Iowa. But this is a guy that I personally thought, okay, Iowa and Iowa State are going to be involved, but at least in the beginning, and that he would end up at like a Tennessee or like an Oregon or a Georgia or a Notre Dame. And that's just not what happened. I mean, Iowa continued to push for him from the get go, and growing up a fan of a program that is known as tight end U is quite a pull in and of itself. But I mean, to be quite honest, Brewer was a guy that was going to be on my 5-star radar early on in his career. And, you know, you never know what can happen in terms of development when they're freshmen. He was a guy that got an offer from Iowa State right away, but I was like, he's probably going to be a 4, maybe even 5-star by the time it's all said and done. Ends up a high 3 because he reclassified. I still think he should be a 4. It's not up to me, guys. Just saying. A really strong base. I got to see him at Iowa State's camp last summer, not this previous summer, but the summer prior to that. Really strong base, wide catch radius, athletic. I don't think that it's really hard to come in and play right away as a freshman. Thomas Meyer is the exception, not the rule. And he didn't even play that much. Like he played a little bit and he's already huge. Like, it's it's still going to be a little bit before Luke Brewer breaks through, especially because Meyer's in that group. And now you've got DJ Vanami, who went from being a walk-on to a scholarship and a critical piece of the offense. Michael Burt's still involved. We don't know how quickly Mason Woods and Eli Johnson are going to develop. But, I mean, to me, Brewer is a cornerstone and a really solid reason for a guy like Bessinger, Trayden Bessinger, to believe that Iowa's moving in a better direction in terms of its talent offensively. Iowa has traditionally been pretty good at getting tight ends and developing them into a Sam Laporta, into a Noah Fant, into a TJ Hawkinson, and into a Luke Lachey. But Luke Brewer comes in as a guy with some pedigree that was sought after by Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, etc. And I think that pairing is really intriguing and potentially exciting down the road. But yeah, I mean, to get an in-state kid, to get him to stay, to beat Iowa State, that seemed like the favorite momentarily. Miami looked like a favorite momentarily. Tennessee even impressed him on his official visit. To get that reclassification, bring him in, that's a pretty big win.
Well, and one thing that is important to note with Luke Brewer is that because he did reclassify, he can't join in January as well. He will have to finish out the rest of his high school year, and then we'll join the team in June. Tyler Barnes did make sure to say that. One more note on just the general tight end room and how Luke could potentially elevate that. As you mentioned, the developmental side of this program, and that's really what a lot of National Signing Day is about, is setting the foundation of where they start so that they can develop at Iowa. I feel like it's important to add that you mentioned it. Brewer's commitment probably really helped out Bessinger's commitment to decide to become a Hawkeye, in just the sense of you're raising that initial starting point a little bit more. I know he didn't come out as a four-star like a lot of people maybe expected. I also was thinking he was going to end up a little bit more closer to a four-star maybe than a high three. But, I mean, I feel like you can agree with this, that just even the starting point of Luke committing to Iowa just kind of almost just raises the bar a little bit more. One person's obviously not going to do that permanently, and obviously the receiving class this coming that just recently signed also certainly helps that as well, but it does elevate things a little bit more in a tangible way that, you know, Iowa hasn't really seen, especially in positions that just straight up catch the ball, whether that be receiving core or tight ends.
Yeah, tight ends can be an exception at Iowa. They just haven't really been in terms of the recruits that Iowa gets. They just end up being good, i.e. like a DJ Vanami. But yeah, I mean, what you hope to do in getting a prospect like a Brewer is to raise that floor with the recruits that you bring in. And it's a starting point, if anything. And you throw Bessinger in there and it continues to raise that floor. And I mean, Iowa had a commit in Cash Herrera, who is actually committed to Boise State now after decommitting from Indiana. So I think Iowa got the best out of that trade. I like Cash. I think he will be pretty good at Boise. But Bessinger is on another level. So to get Bessinger out of that situation, I think that also speaks to Tim Lester. One thing I was told by a source last year when Gronowski left after his visit was that, you know, I feel good about any quarterback that visits because of Tim Lester. And I mean, you heard that yesterday from Tyler Barnes, is basically anybody gets in front of Tim Lester and it's going to be a positive thing. I mean, you've been able to talk to him, you know, in our pressers that we've had. You can feel the tangible energy. You can feel the desire to work with kids. And let me tell you, that's quite a bit different than the last offensive coordinator. It's just a palpable difference. And it's a feeling of when you get done talking to him and he's talking about scheme and how he can use his players, like, man, I wish I was a quarterback. You know? I wish I was good enough to play here. But I just ran cross country in high school. So anyway, I do think that Lester has significantly at least made an initial impact on who and how Iowa can recruit, especially at the quarterback position. Tight end's a little unique just because of the history, but to get a prospect like Brewer is a win.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've kind of been talking a little bit about Best in Girl. Let's dive into it a little bit more. At the moment, also not joining Iowa in January, Barnes said that he's kind of poking Bessinger and saying like, hey, do you want to maybe consider it? But it sounds like, you know, Kirk Ferentz has always said that they don't require signees to show up in January. It's not mandatory. If they want to pursue winter or spring sports in high school, they have the option to do that. They like their multi-sport athletes, as they've said before. So it seems like that might be the route here. But I mean, when you anytime you can get somebody to flip commitment, I think it shows the genuine desire to make a move and maybe push the envelope a little bit. But I feel like this particular flip was so interesting throughout this recruiting process because Bessinger was so committed to Boise State. And even Barnes admitted that he was like, he was pretty high on them. And so for him to make that change, I know you said that you feel like it's Iowa's probably got the better end of the deal here, but I mean, how it seems like commitment flips happen all the time, but this one just kind of felt a little bit different, Elliot. I don't know if you felt the same or not.
I would reaffirm what Tyler said, that Boise had their claws in him, so to speak. When he got the offer, we had one of our national guys kind of poke around, and it was like maybe he'll visit. It's kind of doubtful, but he's probably going to stick with Boise State. And initially it was just my thought personally was, well, they tried, you know. I just didn't really think it was anything was going to amount from the offer, and lo and behold, here we are. But he also had offers from Minnesota, BYU, and UCLA, and BYU would have made some sense, being he's from Utah, and you know, Mormonism is the thing out there. But Ryder Lyons, the top quarterback I think in this class for us, was committed. He had planned to go on a mission before joining the program, so Bessinger would have had a full year there, rather than, you know, being there at the same time as Lyons. So that was something they could sell. Clearly BYU has money with all the crumble cookies and all that stuff going on. So they had that to sell to him. I mean, I don't know that Minnesota has much to sell comparatively to Iowa, other than they're not Iowa regarding the recent history of offense. And UCLA didn't have a coach at that point in time when they offered.
Right.
So he very well, and I, you know, to choose a BYU over an Iowa, considering the recent history of offensive success at BYU and lack thereof at Iowa, would have made a lot of sense. Fortunately for Iowa, their BYU starting quarterback is, I think, a redshirt freshman or a freshman. I'd have to look into that. But and then they've got Ryder Lyons committed and probably going to pay him a good chunk of change. So very fortunate that Iowa was able to get into this situation. I think it's one of those things where in the moment it was Bessinger betting on himself in a way, and then thanks to his performance this season got that huge bump. I mean, I'm sure you've seen his stats.
It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, I want to do him justice, so I'm gonna see if I can find him. But if what I remember correctly is like 300 completions for, it was like 76% completion percentage.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Let me see, actually. And like 4,000 yards and 50 touchdowns to 4 picks or something crazy. It was just insane. So I'm going to see if I can grab it here. Okay. 333 of 438 through the air. That's 76% for 4,313 yards, 53 touchdowns, and just 4 interceptions. That's
ladies
nuts.
And gentlemen, those are video game numbers. Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I mean, I Sean and our national guys, and I mean, I had a share in covering his specific recruitment too, but we're really all over this one, more so our national, our West guys. So I haven't watched a ton of film, but I've watched enough to tell you that he can really whip it. Like he throws darts. They're tight, tight throws on the money, and I haven't seen an Iowa quarterback prospect throw the ball like that in I don't know how long, like not since I've been covering recruiting, unless they, you know, they offered Bryce Underwood out of high school, but that doesn't count. You know, there was never a chance he was coming to Iowa. So with Bessinger, it's, you know, you hope, if you're an Iowa fan, you hope that this is the change that you've been seeking for a long time. For a long time, it was, oh, you're a quarterback and you want to come here? Come on down. And what resulted in that was Lester saying, okay, we're going to move on, you know, and revamping this entire quarterback room in 2 years, and doing it multiple times. So Bessinger very much could be the guy that helps change some things.
Well, and it's so interesting going back to what you were talking about with Tim Lester. It's, you really do feel like he's so involved and so passionately, like, he's so passionately smart about all of this. It's not just that he knows his stuff, but you feel the energy, as you were mentioning earlier. And I think that again was so important in the recruitment process. Like, you and I can talk about this for days. You sit in front of Lester for a press conference, or the team talks about sitting in with him in meetings, and they're like, yeah, okay, you're listening to it. And you're like, you could explain the most complicated football play to me, and you give me probably 20 minutes, I've got it. I could run it on the field right now. Yeah. You don't want me to do that. I promise you that right now. I cover football. I don't play it. But it's just, that's just kind of the mind that he is. And we're starting to see a little bit more of the long-term effects of having an offensive coordinator like Tim Lester, is that you're able to bring in these kinds of recruits with this caliber of talent to be able to make the long-term goal exist. And the long-term goal was to create an Iowa offense with a legit identity that has the ability to draw in national talent. I mean, Iowa doesn't really recruit out of Utah very often. Like, it's not necessarily a state that they're looking for right now, especially when they do so well recruiting in state, for one, but also just in the surrounding states too. So it's such a unique perspective, but I do really think this is where that long-term side of Lester's capabilities can really start to flourish.
Yeah. You can see Iowa being a little bit different, and this goes for a lot of programs in terms of quarterback recruiting. You're more open to going all over the country, but Utah is a unique one. I mean, Iowa tends to recruit, like you said, Iowa, surrounding states, a little bit of Texas, and then Florida just really tends to be where they end up. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to see. And that was another reason why I was like, well, they tried when they offered him, because I was like, he's not coming here. And lo and behold, here we are.
Exactly. Sometimes the Wayne Gretzky saying that, you know, I've been raised on, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Sometimes you just got to take a shot, see what happens. And clearly this one could work out really nicely for Iowa, particularly in that long-term phase.
Yep, it could. Yeah, I think you give him a year, 2 years, 3 years, maybe, depending on Heklinski or whoever starts up next. I do think he'll be a week one starter at some point in his career, probably sooner rather than later.
And I think there are a lot of Iowa fans that are excited to hear that statement. But all right, enough about the two that have seemed to kind of grab a lot of attention. Let's talk about some of these preferred walk-ons that have signed. Four of them in particular. A couple of them are from the Iowa area. Elliot, I mean, Iowa seems to really like signing preferred walk-ons. Again, we go back to that traditional recruitment style of sometimes the best stories are the ones that may not get the most national attention. They find their way onto a roster and they have their own success story. So, I mean, how have you seen the four that are signing as these preferred walk-ons potentially could potentially take on that storyline that Iowa's developed nicely?
Yeah. Well, you are post roster cap time. In my first year is when I got to see what Iowa's recruiting classes really looked like with all those walk-ons. I think they signed like 15 walk-ons. Yeah. A very different time. So, and I think last year it was just two or three, if I remember right. But anyway, this class in particular, I have my favorite, and I'm sure folks who are listening that are in the Cedar Rapids area will appreciate this. And to me, the one that sticks out the most is David Faison from Cedar Rapids Prairie. I went and watched them practice this summer. I think it was probably August, and Coach Kyle Knock told me, and I'd never really heard of anybody on this roster as someone who was covering recruiting and starting the Prep Red Zone stuff as well. And Kyle Knox says to me, that's the best state or best athlete in the state of Iowa. And he was talking about David Faison. I don't know who this is. And ultimately was able to go out and watch him play against Bettendorf this year. But I mean, you look at the stats and I don't think they tell the whole story because you don't see athleticism in stats, but he had a state leading. This isn't 5A leading. This is all classes. That includes like 8-man, class A, all of it. 34 tackles for loss this season. That is almost half of his total tackles. He had 71.5 tackles, 34 tackles for loss, 10 sacks. Heavy hands, super athletic. He's just short. If he was 3 or 4 inches taller, he'd have an offer from everybody, at least in the Midwest. Only Division I offer he got was from UNI and opted to walk on at Iowa. And he's got – there are some plays that stick out and that I saw in person this last year. One of them is – and I can guarantee you Kelvin Bell loves this type of play. And David actually committed the following week after I saw this. And Kelvin was at the game that I was at. So I was like, I guarantee Kelvin loved that when I saw it, but it was, I think it was a swing pass or a screen, and David just shoved off the assignment, the guy who was blocking him, and took off directly horizontally and made the tackle, no gain. If you're a defensive tackle making that play, Kelvin Bell loves that type of stuff, that high motor, high energy type play. And then you throw in the fact that David played tight end for Prairie too. I think he led them in receiving. If not, it was close. And he did last year. Just a really athletic defensive tackle that is at the mercy of his genetics in terms of his height. Cause otherwise, like I said, he would have been more heavily recruited, but like I said, heavy hands, athletic burst. If I had to pick one of this group that ends up on scholarship, that ends up being an impact guy, would not surprise me if that's a David Faison type. Yeah, he's super athletic. Go down the list. Isaiah Oliver, the son of Dean Oliver, former point guard at Iowa, a receiver that I had somebody tell me that whoever gets him is going to be lucky, and they thought he was going to go FCS, and then he ends up at Iowa. So Iowa hasn't had a lot of success in terms of walk-ons at receiver, but there's the potential there. There's the genetics there that are, of course, advantageous. Eli Robbins, teammate of Luke Brewer. I've seen him listed receiver now. I thought he was coming in as a DB. He did both at Norwalk, was super productive at both. A guy who's uniquely, I think he's got pretty good ball skills and was just kind of the workhorse, the bell cow of that offense for several years from sophomore to senior year. Probably didn't get the offers he wanted because he had to have hip surgery prior to his junior year. And that kept him out of the camp circuit, but I think he may have ended up with some FCS offers. I'd have to double check that. Lastly, Noah Daniel, a previously committed to South Dakota State DB, which when you get those as preferred walk-ons, that's a win across the board. South Dakota State is a top-tier program in the FCS, and I think would be competitive if they joined like a Mountain West or even, you know, some of the other – I mean, the Dakota schools could probably enter the Power Four and be somewhat competitive right away. So their developmental capabilities at programs like that, their ability to have an eye for talent, to dip into places like Iowa, nab those guys and make them studs is well documented. So to get a player like Noah Daniel, who was committed to South Dakota State, to come to Iowa as a preferred walk-on, have a chance. I mean, typically, and again, you haven't seen this yet, but typically Iowa has a walk-on converted to scholarship that plays free safety. I mean, Quinn Schulte, Jack Kerner, like it's starting to look like it's a possibility going forward with a guy like Kyler Girardi, who is a stud and is a walk-on. So, and then, you look at a guy like a Race Heitman or some of the other guys on the roster. But Race was, I think, I'm going to get this wrong, but in a game as a senior, he had, I think, a punt return, a kick return, a pick six, and an offensive touchdown within a quarter.
Goodness.
I don't know if that's right, but yeah, he joined as a walk-on. So you just start thinking about the history of safety walk-ons, and Noah Daniel has some of those aspects in who he is and what he's done at Fort Dodge.
Well, yeah, you and I have both come from FCS alma maters in some cases. Like, I know you've got a lot of ties to UNI, James yep. Madison, both FCS program, JMU obviously now not FCS, but at least when I was in college, they were still FCS. You and I both understand the talent level that a lot of these schools have. So when you do bring in somebody, and I think that's where, when I first, you know, got this job and was doing all the research, I think one of the things that made me go, okay, Mark Gronowski's a legit quarterback. I don't need to see anything from training camp to really understand that, because I'd seen him play because I was in college when he was first getting his opportunities. And truly, there's a number of those FCS powerhouses, the North Dakota States, South Dakota States of the world that could join the FBS realm, whether it be the Group of Five or Power Four, and fit in pretty seamlessly. So, yep. and the players talk about that constantly too. I mean, normally you have every season, you've got an FCS opponent or two, and every single player, it's not coach speak, it's not media training. It is legit in the sense of they're still D1 athletes. It might not have the same, they might not have the same level of resources or scholarships. They're still Division I athletes.
And especially, I think that's the big thing. Especially when you're talking about Missouri Valley Football Conference.
Oh, like, my gosh, yeah.
I always used to talk about them as the SEC of the FCS because they were just loaded from top to bottom.
That's the perfect analogy, truly. That actually is so incredibly correct.
Yeah. Not as much anymore with you and I having kind of dipped and you know, Murray State is the new Western Illinois, but yeah, there's still a ton of talent. I mean, but all four of the Dakota schools, Illinois State,
Montana. I mean, we could go down the line.
Is Big Sky, but
Big Sky, yeah. But still in that FCS powerhouse realm.
Yeah,
it's just insane. So all right. So I know you said, I know you gave your favorite of the preferred walk-ons, but who out of all 22 of these incoming freshmen do you think maybe hasn't been talked about enough just yet? There's a lot that you could talk about, and this podcast could be 4 hours long. But if you had to pick one that hasn't maybe gotten the attention that they deserve, who would it be and why?
To me, at least, you know, based on, it could be probably two that I look at the rankings and I think of. And the first one is Colin Witters from Iowa City West. I think he was pretty under-recruited in the Midwest. He is an athletic, big, strong, mean offensive lineman that has experience playing defensive tackle. And, I mean, you put all those things together, and that's like a dream fit for George Barnett. He is super active in the Iowa City community already, grew up a Hawkeye. It just really makes sense. The fit makes sense. And no, I don't think he's going to play in year one, two, maybe even three, but he is he's already over 300 pounds. Big boy. Big boy, plays multiple sports, played basketball, was, he was a state champ in shot this last year, was one of the top guys in disc as well, if he didn't win it, I can't remember. But Colin is almost everything you want in an Iowa offensive lineman under George Barnett. So he's one of my favorites. The next one is Ronnie Hill out of Michigan. I said he's that Phil Parker special. Ronnie is like Marcello from Michigan and was heavily sought after by Michigan State after he committed to Iowa. So they were really pushing for both of them. Michigan was in on Marcello for a little while too, but Ronnie is our long rangy safety that played receiver as well. So he's got the ball skills. There are some clips on his film where you're like, oh, when he levels a guy, and it kind of looks like Xavier Wampa. Like I'm not like, from what we've seen where he just lowers a shoulder and just pops a dude as the ball's arriving. Ronnie Hill has got a little bit of that to him. So I don't necessarily know that he's going to be an early impact guy. One player that we have to talk about before we get out of here is our highest ranked player in this class, and Darian Jones. I love Darian Jones. He was my underrated guy before this recent bump.
I would say, I feel like if I remember correctly, when all the announcements that their paperwork was coming in, I feel like you even tweeted that this was your guy from the class. This
was my guy. He has speed, playmaking, vision, ball skills. Like, he was elite in the Omaha area on offense, defense, and special teams. would not shock me at all if he plays on special teams, especially in year one. Maybe could even find a route to the field at corner early on. Maybe not year one, but early on. Long, he's just, you know, when you look at players that play defensive back that are also returners that have come from Iowa, things tend to turn out pretty well for them at the next level too. So that's another reason why I'm like, oh, this guy could be, and he grew up a diehard Hawkeye fan, which is even better. You know, Hawk fanatic and Pat Hardy, but his Dallas Jones used to work there. It's Dallas's younger brother. He's no longer on the beat. He moved to Arizona, but he's a really good guy. And so there's that connection. Their middle brother Donovan plays DB for Nebraska. So I don't know if you saw that, but yeah, a lot of family ties in this part of the country, and he's just really good. Like, I mean, you flip on the highlights and it's like, holy crap, every play. So he's one that we definitely couldn't skip over on this pod.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's always a handful that you got to highlight just because it's the story of it and how they all blend together. And then you always got the one that you're like, you can't not talk about this kid because it's just like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And so it's always fun to speculate what they could be, knowing the numbers that they put up in high school and their stories and everything. And you guys at 247 do a great job of tracking the recruiting. I truly don't understand how you will keep your heads on straight with all of it. I do my best to follow as much as I can, but the wealth of knowledge you all have is truly so impressive. So I do appreciate your insight, Elliot. This has been a fun time.
Yeah, yeah. I throw in the fact that I'm doing Prep Red Zone too and covering basically all high school football in Iowa, and there is so much useless information up here, I tell you what.
I don't think that clearly the length of this podcast proves that it's not useless information. Let's Touché. Just get that very straightforward.
Touché.
But Elliot, thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this, there's a podcast every week. There's also a newsletter with the exact same name, Hawk Off the Press, that comes out every Friday morning. You can sign up for that for free at thegazette.com. Thank you so much for watching. We will see you next time.
Not a Gazette subscriber? There's no better time to support local journalism. View our latest deals for print and digital offerings at thegazette.com/subscribe. Stay informed, be empowered. Subscribe to The Gazette today at thegazette.com/subscribe.